The birth certificate of the United States of America is the Declaration of Independence. And it has references to God four times. And in fact, one of those references is the laws of nature and of nature's God. Now, one scholar of the Declaration of Independence and American law in general knows a lot about Sir William Blackstone. This is a man from England who wrote in the 1700s four commentaries on the laws of England. I'm referring now to the Chief Justice Tom Parker of the state of Alabama. He has been collecting, actually, editions of Sir William Blackstone's commentaries. He studied this a great deal, and I think it's really important to look at the Declaration of Independence and some of the great ideas that came from it from a man that is Sir William Blackstone, who believed very much in natural law and in God's created, revealed law, which is found in the scriptures. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Focal Point. And Chief Justice Parker, it is so great to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Jerry, it's a joy to be with you to talk about this major influence on America's philosophy and institutions.
Well, I'll tell you, ideas have consequences, and when we truly study the ideas that made America what it is, we have to get back to some of these Christian sources, because those are the sources that the founders looked at. So tell us about Sir William Blackstone, and then we'll focus on the Declaration of Independence itself and Blackstonian influence, if you will, on the Declaration.
Well, Blackstone was the first to put together a comprehensive report of the common law of England. He published four books in sequence from 1765 through 1769. And it was said on the floor of Parliament that more copies of Blackstone sold in the colonies than in England. In the United States, he is the second most cited thinker in American politics from 1760 to 1805. Now, we're not talking about law. We're talking about political theory. So his impact was far beyond just the law. He influenced his country in just so many incredible ways. And one thing I'd like to share, there were no copyright laws in that era. And so Robert Bell, a printer in Philadelphia, was asked to print a set of Blackstone commentaries here in America, and he didn't know if it would sell. So he had people subscribe to it in advance, and we have a list of all those subscribers in his publication. There were 831 individuals who subscribed to the publication, and 16 of those signed the Declaration of Independence. Six were delegates to the Constitutional Convention. One became President of the United States, and one became Chief Justice. Now, there were also additional copies printed that were sold through booksellers, and I have one of those 1771 editions that was owned by the father of the U.S. Constitution, James Madison. So this had a tremendous impact, and something for your listeners to understand. Blackstone is viewed as the source of the philosophy of America in the Declaration. That's called in legal terms, academic terms, the natural rights of man theory or approach. But your listeners will know it clearly by the words used in the Declaration, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. What the natural rights of law means is that these are rights that God gave man, and he is viewed as the source of that philosophy of America in the Declaration, tracing all the way back to his dependence on natural law and writing about its influence in the formation of law.
What exactly is natural law?
Well, let me just open up James Madison's copy right here and say this: the law of nature, being co-evolved with mankind and dictated by God himself, is of course superior in obligation to any other. That means that it's created at the same time as mankind. It is binding over all the globe in all countries and at all times. No human laws are of any validity if contrary to this, and such as them as are valid, derive all their force and all their authority from this original. This is what our founding fathers were reading about law. But then Blackstone gets really theological, talking about the effect of the fall of man in the garden. It corrupted man's reason ability so that he could no longer correctly discern the laws of God from nature. And he writes, this has given manifold occasion for the benign interposition of divine providence, which in compassion to the frailty, the imperfection, and the blindness of human reason has been pleased at sundry times and in diverse manners to discover and enforce its laws by an immediate and direct revelation. The doctrines thus delivered we call the reveal or divine law, and they are to be found only in the Holy Scriptures. Then he brings these two sources of law together and say, upon these two foundations, the law of nature and the law of revelation depend all human laws. That is to say, no human law should be suffered to contradict these. So, that's what our founding fathers were reading. That's very different than what we're trying to be told by liberal academics who want to take God out of the equation. No, our founding fathers were reading that law came from God, and man-made law had to align with God's law.
That is just amazing. Okay, the Declaration of Independence mentions God four times. You've already mentioned the idea that he is the creator and he has endowed us with our rights. We've already discussed the phrase, the laws of nature and of nature's God. I do know that they mentioned near the end that they had an appeal to the supreme judge of the world. Is Blackstone in that too? Or what were Blackstone's views about judgment and so forth?
That I cannot answer, but I would like to indicate to your listeners, we typically, when we refer to the Declaration, only refer to the first part. But the vast majority of the Declaration are the charges against King George. And those can be traced in large back to Blackstone. Let me just share some of these with you, if I may.
Sure.
The right to petition, the charge in the Declaration. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injuries. Blackstone wrote, there still remains that right appertaining to every individual, namely the right of petitioning the king or either house of parliament for the redress of grievances. So they took these principles from Blackstone and put them into the charges against King George. Taxation, the charge against King George. The king has given his assent for imposing taxes on us without our consent. Blackstone. No subject of England can be constrained to pay any aids or taxes, even for the defense of the realm or the support of government, but such as are imposed by his own consent. Now, this gets right down to one of the main things that happened creating the discord that led to the revolution, because England had spent so much money in the colonies during the French and Indian War, defending its territory here, it needed to recoup some of that money, and that's when they started passing the taxes that riled the colonists. And this goes right back to Blackstone, says only those imposed by man's own consent. That did not occur with the taxes that King George had Parliament pass, and so that was one of the major discords leading to the revolution. Here's another one. The king's protection of his subjects. The charge in the Declaration. The king has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. Blackstone, it is a maximum in law that protection and subjection are reciprocal. So So they kept going back to Blackstone, even for these charges. They did that for the quartering of troops. The king has given his assent for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. Blackstone said the petition of right enacts that no soldier shall be quartered on the subject without his own consent. And trial by jury, what I'm involved in as a judge, the charge against King George. The king has given his assent for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. Blackstone wrote, "The trial by jury is that trial by the peers of every Englishman, which as the grand bulwark of his liberties is secured to him by the Great Charter," talking about the Great Charter of England. "Our law has wisely placed this strong barrier between the liberties of the people and the prerogatives," that means the rights, "of the crown." So Blackstone had a tremendous influence on the way that our colonial leaders, our founding fathers, were viewing the dispute. They were viewing the world, and even it created a common language that they could use when they came together from these widely spread apart colonies to some of the first organizational meetings. They were able to talk in the same language about the same thing, and it's all because of the influence of Sir William Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England in the colonies.
You know, I wonder how many Americans today even know who Sir William Blackstone was. Because of our widespread ignorance about American history, I imagine not many do. But I will say this, having traveled to D.C. on many occasions for work with D. James Kennedy Ministries, filming things and so forth, the statue of Sir William Blackstone that existed, and they refurbished it, on Constitution Avenue, kind of looking real close, relatively close to the U.S. Capitol. It used to be really crummy and tarnished, but the last time I saw it, it was well polished and it looked great. And it's big too, by the way, and it's worth noting, but I think unfortunately he gets short shrift, you know, at the end of the day. Well, we have a minute and a half left. What else do you want to say about Sir William Blackstone and our Declaration of Independence?
Well, let me go back even before the Declaration, because Samuel Adams, in an article that he published in the Boston Gazette in 1769, used Blackstone to justify a revolution. He said, when Blackstone said, "When the rights of individuals are actually violated or attacked, the subjects of England are entitled first to the regular administration and free course of justice in the courts of law, next to the right of petitioning the king in Parliament for redress of grievances." That occurred repeatedly in the colonies leading up to the Revolutionary War. And then he says, "And lastly, to the right of having and using arms for self-preservation and defense." Blackstone was used to justify the revolution and to state in legal terms that could be understood around the world in the Declaration what the grievances were, and then he became the source of the institutions of America through the Constitution of the United States.
Wow. Well, I wish we had more time, but thank you so much. I appreciate all your scholarship, and have you read all four of the volumes? I hate to put you on the spot. I'm just curious.
Yes.
You have?
Yes, but I will tell you, if anybody tries to get some of the earlier printed ones, you've got to retrain your mind to read, because that's where the F's look like S's.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Oh, that would be tough. Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you. I think what we need today is Blackstone Made Easy or something like that, or Blackstone for Dummies. Hey, thank you, Chief Justice Thomas Parker. Appreciate your time. God bless you.
Well, blessing to you and your listeners.